Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Can an immigrant family become good people? Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter, and you are joining us today, Saturday, September 5th, 2026, for our books article for the month of September in your trusty Advanced magazine. We have an interesting book to talk about with you today. It's called Good People: Unravel Secrets Behind an Afghan-American Family. So we're going to read through this article with you today, talk about the vocabulary, talk about some of the ideas in it. And by we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist joining us for this discussion. Please welcome to the program, Linda.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everyone. It is great to be here.
Good to have you with us here, Linda. It almost feels with Linda and me here in the studio like an episode of our Art of English feature, in which we get together and talk about a book or sometimes even a poem.
That's true, yes. Yeah, this time we're talking about a more modern book.
Yes, yes. Something that Art of English tends to be a little older. But today we're talking about a book recently published, I think within the past year, in fact, called Good People. The title of the article is Good People, and that is also the title of the book. We'll get into the specifics of it in a moment, but just to sort of get us in a literary frame of mind here, Linda, there's a novelist named Alice McDermott. She didn't write this one, Good People, but she's written several books. She teaches at Johns Hopkins University. Alice McDermott, she once wrote an essay called All Drama is Family Drama. All drama is family drama. And by drama, we don't just mean plays, stage plays, like the word is sometimes used. We mean just stories, all fictional stories, all drama is family drama. What do you think of that?
I will agree with most of it. When I think we're talking about drama here, like conflict, emotions,
right,
like,
right,
that are involved when people get together, because we are never going to always agree and we have different points of view and personality. So I definitely think there is a lot of drama in family. Not all of it is in family, though. Mm. But I do believe that every family has drama.
Mm.
Some more than others, definitely. But you can find drama, I think, in every situation where you find people.
Mm-hmm.
There's work drama in the workplace, in the home, between kids at school. You will find drama wherever people are involved. But family definitely is a huge source of drama, because those are the people that you spend a lot of time with, you're related to, and just because you're related to them doesn't mean that you're going to get along. Most often it means that you will
just the
have conflict, yes. And so I definitely have my share of family drama, and it's something we all have to deal with. Yeah.
Certainly there is always drama within the family. I think there's another aspect of McDermott's statement here, all drama is family drama, in that shit. Maybe meaning, and I admit I have not read the essay, but it's a line that I heard once years ago, and it always sort of stuck with me, all drama is family drama. I think there's another way to think about that in terms of all drama that we read. I think particularly TV shows are, in a way, can be looked upon as a family drama. I'll give you an example of what I mean. The popular American TV sitcom Friends, about a bunch of single people, six single people living in New York City. There are ways I've seen reviewers of the show look at it and find correlations to family roles in the drama. Even though they're all single people, roughly the same age, nevertheless, as we watch this show, we see various of the cast members take on a sort of father role in a certain scene, or a motherly role in a certain scene, or a spousal role in a certain scene, spousal meaning husband or wife. And that, in a way, all drama, regardless of whether it's set in an actual family or among a bunch of single people, or even an adventure somewhere, often has a family dynamic underneath it, in which certain characters relate to each other the way people in a family relate to each other, even though they may not be totally, they may be totally unrelated to each other.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we automatically take on roles, certain types of roles, just, it could be due to like how we grew up, how we were raised, or just our personality. Some people are just more motherly, and so they automatically take on that role and are motherly to friends or people who surround them, not necessarily people who are related to them. And also we've done articles on sibling, like birth order,
yes,
and how that affects us in the workplace. So we automatically just revert or just take on these roles because of our experience, like in the family,
right,
and how we've interacted with our actual family members.
Right. The way we respond, the way we react and relate to our family members is familiar to us. So it makes sense that we would maybe unconsciously reproduce those kinds of relationships outside of our family as well. Anyway, today we will look at one particular family in our book, Good People, here, and see where the drama comes from this particular family and how the drama is in this particular family. So again, this is our books article for the month of September, and we will do two readings today. Let's go into our first reading now.
Good People. Unravel secrets behind an Afghan-American family. Padmina Sabit's debut, Good People, may remind readers of Celeste Ng's best-selling Little Fires Everywhere, in that it's a domestic tale that reads like a propulsive thriller and springs from a clash of cultures. Sabit writes about the Sharaf family, who came to the Washington, D.C. area from Afghanistan and have become hugely successful, until tragedy erases all the progress they think they've made. Good People takes the form of an investigation. We never hear from the Sharafs, Father Ramat, who built a business empire from nothing, devoted mother Miriam, son Omar, a budding entrepreneur, stunning daughter Zora, who chafes at her family's rules, and two little-seen younger children. Sabit presents us with dozens of eyewitness accounts from neighbors, friends, law enforcement, and news media, all of whom attempt to understand a tragedy that's revealed about one-third of the way through the book.
This novel, Good People, that she's written is her debut, which means it's the first novel she's had published. Our author says that the book may remind readers of another book, Celeste Ng's Little Fires Everywhere, a bestseller, apparently.
Yeah,
I do not know the book myself. Have you read it?
Yeah, I've read it. I saw that there was a TV series, like a mini series based on the book, and it had two popular Hollywood actresses in it, ones that I like and admire. So I was really interested in the series. Plus, they also were part of producing it, and it was like a female, like produced and led production.
Mm.
So I first heard about it through that TV series. And after, did I watch it first? But maybe I watched clips and then I read the book. And I've also read other books by Celeste Ng, which are good. Little Fires Everywhere, I would recommend it.
Uh-huh.
And the TV series as well. It's interesting that the TV series, they have two, because it's basically about like two different families and how they interact and things that happen. But in the book, it isn't clearly stated that they're different races, but in the TV series, they are different races. So there are different dynamics, different things at play in the TV series versus in the book. But it's if you watch or read both, then you will see that. But I would recommend them.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, readers getting a two-for-one today. We have both Padmina Sabbat's Good People, and if you may also want to check out Celeste Eng's Little Fires Everywhere. Our author here says that Good People may remind readers of Little Fires Everywhere. Why? Why may it do that?
Because it's a domestic tale, and here domestic would mean the U.S. in the U.S., and it reads like a propulsive thriller. So this word propulsive, you can probably see the word propel, the verb propel, which means to move forward, right, with vigor. So something that is propulsive is moving quickly and in an exciting way.
Yeah.
So this is a thriller that's moving quickly, it's exciting, and it springs from a clash of cultures. And that very much is reflected in Little Fires Everywhere.
Hmm.
Like I mentioned before, the two families who are clashing, and also because they differ in culture. And so we will see that also in Good People, because in our deck, we're introduced to them as an Afghan-American family. So you have these two different cultures, Afghan culture and American culture.
Right, right. And maybe a word we jumped over in the deck there, unravel secrets behind an Afghan-American family. If something unravels, it means it comes apart. It's a term, I think, originated in knitting or clothes making. If you pull at a certain thread in a garment, and you pull and pull and pull, and it begins to unravel the whole garment, it begins to come apart. And so in this case, it is family secrets that are coming apart in the course of the book. Sabit, it goes on to say in our first paragraph, Sabit writes about the Sharaf family who came to the Washington, D.C. area from Afghanistan and have become hugely successful until tragedy erases all the progress they think they've made. How sad. But, you know, we got to have a story here.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just have hugely successful people. Something's got to happen. And then it goes on in our second paragraph to say that Good People, the book Good People, takes the form of a particular type of story. What type of story?
An investigation. So here's, if we are reading a mystery, it would be natural for there to be an investigation, because you have to find out, you have to unravel what has happened, right?
Right.
If there was a murder, you have to find out who did it, right? In a previous books article, we did a whodunit, right? There
yes.
was this murder or this death, and the people involved, they had to find out how it happened and who did it and the reasons behind it. So they had to investigate. So here we are investigating maybe why this tragedy unfolds in the lives of this Afghan family.
Right. Whatever the tragedy was, our author here doesn't specify, and I think that's deliberate so that we can encounter that as we read the book and be surprised by it. But it's interesting here. The very next line says, we never hear from the Sharafs. Father Ramat, who built a business empire from nothing, entrepreneurial sort of man, devoted mother, Mariam, son, Omer, a budding entrepreneur. Who else do we learn about in the Sharaf family?
Well, they have a daughter, an older daughter. She is described as stunning, so she's very beautiful, but she also chafes at her family's rules. So if you chafe at something, you feel impatient or annoyed. So she is not happy with her family's rules. And I imagine they are traditional rules that the family has.
Mm.
Like she's probably the example of the rebel who wants to be more American than Afghan.
Mm.
So there's that struggle between the two cultures. They also have other younger children, two younger children, but they're barely seen in the book.
Yes, they are little seen, means, like Linda said, barely seen at all. Now, what's interesting here, though, is that we've got a book that we're told takes the form of an investigation of the Sharaf family, but we never hear from the Sharafs, the very family that we're investigating. So, Linda, how then do we learn? How does the investigation proceed of the Sharaf family?
Yeah, so we learn about what's going on from the people who surround the Sharaf family. So we don't hear from them directly, but we hear dozens or read dozens of eyewitness accounts from neighbors, friends, law enforcement. Obviously, the police, law enforcement had to get involved.
Right. Whatever the tragedy happened, it's something.
News media, is the news media covering this tragedy? And everyone, all of them, attempt to try to understand this tragedy. And it says here, the tragedy is revealed about one-third of the way through the book. So you get the tragedy pretty quickly. It's in the first part of the book.
In the first third of it. And then the rest of it is, how did this happen? What does it mean? So yeah, it sounds interesting, actually, just as a narrative device, to never actually hear from the people who are at the center of it, but to just learn about them through secondhand reports from all kinds of different people, neighbors, friends, law enforcement, news media, people who know them well, people who don't know them at all, but are now investigating them. There's a richness here to the story that draws me in, makes me want to read it. So let's see what the author of our review here, the author of the article, thinks, and we'll find that out in our second reading. So let's go into that now.
It's riveting stuff, in part because the picture of the Sharafs is so complex. As readers try to assemble the dozens of narrators' accounts into a whole picture and an explanation for the tragedy, most observers think the Sharafs triumphed over long odds. Some believe they turned their back on Afghan culture. Some claim they knew all along about fractures in the family. Others believe the Sharafs lived a fairy tale. All are stunned by secrets that eventually emerge. A key theme of Good People is the cultural schism the Sharafs weather. The parents are proud of how successfully their children navigate American customs, but often baffled by their behavior, Zora in particular. She considers herself American, but her parents cling to the way things worked in Afghanistan and expect her to observe practices they grew up with, including arranged marriages and filial piety. It becomes clear those tensions will explode. I kept changing my mind about who was in the right. A key to the success of this is how deftly Sabit captures dozens of voices. In the end, a big question is whether the Sharafs can be both Afghans and Americans.
Okay, so what does our author think of the book? Well, it's riveting stuff. He says right here in the beginning of our second section, riveting, something that is riveting, is so interesting or exciting that you can't stop watching it or listening to it. Your attention is riveted to it. And this is riveting stuff, in part, he says, because the picture of the Sharafs is so complex as readers try to assemble, put together the dozens of narrators' accounts from law enforcement and neighbors and friends and news media all into a picture, a whole picture, and an explanation for the tragedy. So, Linda, speaking of pictures, what kind then of picture emerges of the Sharafs?
Well, there are different views, right, that people have of the Sharafs. Some think that they were successful. They triumphed over long odds.
What are long odds?
Long odds are if things are stacked against you, like you have a lot of obstacles.
Right?
Yeah. In this case, it would be a lot of obstacles they have to overcome in this different culture that they're navigating. And maybe they came over with not much, you know, except what they brought with them. So they didn't have many resources. So they were able to triumph over their setbacks or whatever they had to get over.
Yeah, that seems to be the majority view. Most observers think that they triumphed over long odds. What else?
And then there are some observers who believe that they turned their back on Afghan culture. They didn't. They is going to America. You want to assimilate, but you also want to retain your culture from your country. So this would probably be other Afghans who are looking at them and saying that they turned their back on Afghan culture. They didn't maintain Afghan customs or ways. And then there are other observers who claim that they knew all along about the fractures in the family, all of the difficulties, all of the things that the family was going through that would break it up.
Yeah, the points of tension, the weaknesses, the fractures. That's what that word is referring to here.
And then there are others who believe the Sharafs lived a fairy tale, an ideal life.
Yeah.
Like, they came over, we learned that the father, Ramat, he created this business empire, so they were successful in terms of business, maybe financially. So they looked at them as like having this ideal life. But in the end, everyone is stunned by the secrets that emerge, the secrets that are unraveled.
Yeah, exactly. Good use of the vocab there. And it's a good line by the reviewer here. All are stunned by secrets that eventually emerge, but he doesn't tell us any of those secrets. He just tells us that secrets do emerge, and so that whets our appetite to read. But yeah, from this picture put together by multiple eyewitness accounts of the family, a theme of the overall book itself emerges. What is that theme?
A key theme is the cultural schism, the Sharafs' weather. So this cultural divide, and there's a schism, there's a separation into two groups, right? So there's, we mentioned earlier, like the cultural clash that they encounter. So they are trying to navigate in American culture, but trying to maintain their Afghan culture at the same time.
Yes, yes. It's always the challenge for any immigrant family moving to another country. Parents, the Sharaf parents, are proud of how their children have navigated American customs, how they have sort of made sense and worked their way through in American customs. But the parents are also baffled often by their children's behavior. Baffled, meaning to be, utterly unable to explain something, just completely mystified, particularly by Zora, the stunning daughter who chafes at her family's rules that we heard about in the first section. Zora considers herself American, but her parents cling to the way things worked in Afghanistan and expect her to observe practices they grew up with, including arranged marriages and, what's that term there, Linda?
Filial piety. And this is something we know well in Asian culture.
I think so.
It's being loyal, being filial to your parents, being respectful, following, being obedient to what they say. Honoring your parents.
Right. That word piety from the English word pious, meaning a spiritual devotion, really. And I think that is certainly true of the cultural expectation with regard of the relationship between children and their parents that I've encountered in the time that I've lived here in Chinese culture. And it becomes clear, the author concludes the paragraph by saying that those tensions between Afghanistan tradition and new American lifestyles and customs, those tensions will explode.
Yeah, and this is common in immigrant families. Like the parents, they want their kids to succeed and do well in American schools, American culture, but they it's funny, like it's this struggle. Like you want them to do well in American culture, but at the same time, you want them to still hold on to these traditional cultures. But that's where there's friction, there's tension, because the two don't mix easily. Like there's some, like this cultural divide, this cultural schism can be very wide. There's just such a difference between the traditional culture and the culture that you are assimilating into.
Right, right. And so in the end, the author of the article gives us a further editorial opinion of the book. The author says that, "I kept changing my mind about who was in the right, who was right? Was it Zora's parents who were right, or was it Zora who was right, or was it the police account that was right, or the neighbor's account that was right? Which was the view that got to the truth of the Sharaf family and, you know, presumably why the tragedy happened, whatever that was? And that the author of the article says that he kept changing his mind about that. And how did the author of Good People then, Linda, achieve that effect?
Well, he was able to deftly capture the dozens of voices, the dozens of observers in the book. So she did that very well in describing the viewpoints of the people we mentioned before, the people around the Sharaf family. And everyone has a different view, even though you're watching the same thing, just because we are humans. We have our particular biases and, things that we find more important or less important. So those are all going to factor into their observations or the description of their observations.
Right, right.
So I can understand how that would keep you riveted to the book, as explained by the author of this article, why he was so into it and he kept changing his mind, because whenever you'd read another person's viewpoint, oh, okay, they have a point here.
Right,
I would go with them. Oh, but you read the next viewpoint, it's like, oh, they have points too. So, yeah. So, and it's done very skillfully, done very well.
Right, deftly. And so clearly the author, Pathmina Sabit, is adept at representing multiple different viewpoints so that the reader is challenged, but hopefully intrigued as well as challenged to continue reading the book and to continue thinking about the issues it raises. In the end, as our article author here says, a big question is whether the Sharafs can be both Afghans and Americans. Well, readers, we do encourage you to pick up the book Good People if you would like to tackle this question and think about it and enjoy a good example of English literature. But we must bid you farewell for today. That is all we have for our book review this month. But join us again next time when we'll have a new article to read through with you and to practice your English. For today, though, I'm Peter.
I'm Linda.
Saying bye-bye.
Goodbye.